The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
Thick clouds of smoke from wildfires in the United States have exposed millions of people to harmful levels of pollution. The smoke is causing emergency room visits to jump and may have led to the death of thousands of older and sick people. That information comes from a study of pollution records by the Associated Press, or AP, news agency. The AP also spoke with doctors, health officials, and researchers about conditions on the U.S. West Coast. For at least one day, smoke from the wildfires topped concentration levels that the government says increase health risks. In recent weeks, the smoke has covered areas where more than 8 million people live, the news agency said. The state of Oregon has been hit especially hard by the wildfires. Last month, Oregon's major cities suffered the highest pollution they have ever recorded. Powerful winds worsened fires that had been burning in remote areas and sent them toward the city of Portland. Medical problems began while communities were still covered in smoke. It led to hundreds of additional hospital emergency room visits each day in Oregon, state health officials say. Barb Trout is a 64-year-old retiree who lives south of Portland in the Willamette Valley. The experience has been hard on her, she says. She was taken to the emergency room, or ER, two times after suffering severe asthmatic reactions. It is something that had never happened to her before. Trout had sheltered inside her home as soon as smoke rolled into the Willamette Valley early last month. But within days, she had an asthma attack that left her struggling for air and landed her in the ER. 2 weeks later, smoke from fires in California moved into the valley. That is when she had what she thinks was a near-death experience. It hit me quick and hard, more so than the first one. I wasn't hardly even breathing, Trout told the AP. After getting treatment, she was sent home. But the chance of a third attack worries her, so she and her husband put in a warning system. With it, she can press a button to call for help. Martin Johnson is Trout's doctor and a heart specialist. He lives in nearby Salem, Oregon. Johnson says people with existing breathing conditions started showing up at his hospital or calling his office right after the smoke arrived. Many were struggling to breathe. The Salem area had 8 days of pollution at dangerous levels during a short period. These are some of the worst conditions the West has seen over the past 20 years, the AP study found. Most of Johnson's patients are expected to recover, but some could have permanent loss of lung function, he said. Then there are the hidden victims. These are people who Johnson suspects died from heart attacks or other problems resulting from the poor air quality. But their causes of death are being listed as something else. Stanford University researchers say up to 3,000 people in California, all over the age of 65, died earlier than expected after exposure to smoke for 6 weeks last summer. Their findings are based on earlier studies of pollution-related deaths and the number of people exposed to recent wildfires. Hundreds more deaths could have happened in Washington state over weeks of bad air from the fires, say University of Washington researchers. The findings for both states have not been reported in scientific publications. No such estimate was available for Oregon. A California heat wave last week led to warnings of extreme fire danger, and electric companies turned off some power lines for safety reasons. Wildfires happen each year in western states, but over the years, they have gotten more intense and dangerous as a changing climate dries out forests and other plant life. Particles that are too small to see make the smoke a health risk. They can be breathed in and cause breathing problems. On any day, western fires can make 10 times more particles than other sources, including vehicles and factories, notes Sean Urbanski. He is a smoke scientist with the U.S. Forest Service. Fires across the West released more than 1 million tons of the particles in 2012, 2015, and 2017, and almost as much in 2018. That year, a wildfire in Paradise, California, killed 85 people and burned 14,000 houses. It created thick smoke that covered parts of Northern California for weeks. This year, a combination of weather events made the smoke especially bad. Smoke particles enter the lungs, get down deep, and irritate the lining, said University of Montana Professor Erin Landguth. They may also get into your blood, she said. We're seeing the effects. I'm Alice Bryant.
Facebook has developed the first machine learning model that can translate between any two of 100 languages without going into English first. Facebook says the new multilingual machine translation model was created to help its more than 2 billion users worldwide. The company is still testing the translation system, which it calls M2M100, and hopes to add it to different products in the future. The social media service says it has made the system open source, meaning its computer code will be freely available for others to copy or change. Angela Fan, a research assistant at Facebook, explained the new machine translation model this week on one of the company's websites. She said its development represented a milestone in progress after years of foundational work in machine translation. Fan said the model produces better results than other machine learning systems that depend on English to help in the translation process. The other systems use it as an intermediate step, like a bridge, to translate between two non-English languages. One example would be a translation from Chinese to French. Fan noted that many machine translation models begin by translating from Chinese to English first, and then from English to French. This is done because English training data is the most widely available, she said. But such a method can lead to mistakes in translation. Our model directly trains on Chinese to French data to better preserve meaning, Fan said. Facebook said the system outperformed English-centered systems in a widely used system that uses data to measure the quality of machine translations. Facebook says about two-thirds of its users communicate in a language other than English. The company already carries out an average of 20 billion translations every day on Facebook's news feed. But it faces a huge test with many users publishing massive amounts of content in more than 160 languages. The development team trained or directed the new model on a data set of 7.5 billion sentence pairs for 100 languages. In addition, the system was trained on a total of 2,200 language directions. Facebook said this is 10 times the number on the best machine translation models in the past. One difficulty the team faced was trying to develop an effective machine translation system for language combinations that are not widely used. Facebook calls these low-resource languages. The data used to create the new model was collected from content available on the Internet. But there is limited Internet data on low-resource languages. To deal with this problem, Facebook said it used a method called back-translation. This method can create synthetic translations to increase the amount of data used to train on low-resource languages. For now, the company says, it plans to continue exploring new language research methods while working to improve the new model. No date has been set for launching the translation system on Facebook. But Angela Fan said the new system marks an important step for Facebook, especially for the times we live in. Breaking language barriers through machine language translation is one of the most important ways to bring people together, provide authoritative information on COVID-19, and keep them safe from harmful content, she said. I'm Brian Lynn.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, Wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int, or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. As we reported in our last program, slavery supporters failed to push through Congress a bill to make Kansas a slave state. Congress instead let the people of Kansas vote on the statehood constitution, written by pro-slavery men. The people rejected the Constitution, and slavery supporters gave up the fight for Kansas. Here are Steve Ember and Bob Doty to continue the story.
The problem of slavery continued to divide the North and South. Northerners warned that slavery could spread no farther. Southerners threatened to leave the Union unless Southern rights were protected. In the far West, one could forget this bitter dispute. There were no slaves in the West. The land and the weather were not right for the kind of farming that used slaves.
The West was growing quickly. Gold had brought thousands of settlers to California 10 years earlier. New discoveries of gold and silver now were leading men to Colorado, Arizona, and Nevada. "Don't go," warned the New York Tribune, "if you have a job or a farm. But if you have neither," it said, "and can get $50, then go to Colorado." There were many men without jobs or farms in the summer of 1858. The country had suffered a serious economic depression the year before, and jobs were difficult to find. Thousands left cities in the East. The first ones to reach Colorado reported that gold was easy to find. They said any man who worked hard could find $5 to $10 worth of gold a day, and sometimes even more.
The thousands who rushed to Colorado soon found that there was not as much gold as expected. The valuable metal became harder to find. No longer could it be washed from the bottoms of mountain streams. Men had to dig into the mountains of rock to get it. Huge digging machines and crushers were needed to get the gold from the rock. These machines were expensive. Few men had enough money to buy them. Some of the miners organized companies. They borrowed money from Eastern banks or sold shares of their companies. In a few years, almost all of the gold from Colorado came from the mining companies.
Many of those who went west to search for gold stayed to become farmers or storekeepers. Others moved farther west to find gold in Nevada or California. Some cleared the ground of trees and cut them into wood for houses. Such timber from the forests of Oregon and Washington was sold in California and Mexico, even in China and Hawaii. A few men recognized the need for transportation across the nation. Engineers planned four railroads, but northern and southern leaders could not agree on which one to build first. Until a railroad could be built, supplies were carried west in wagons, pulled by horses or oxen. Three men, Russell, Majors, and Waddell, formed a transportation company in 1855 to carry government supplies to soldiers in the West. They started with 500 wagons. 3 years later, the company had 3,500 wagons and 40,000 oxen.
Getting letters to and from the West was not easy in the 1850s. Ships brought mail to San Francisco two times a month. And once each month, mail would arrive in California after a slow trip by wagon from St. Louis, Missouri. The federal government decided to send mail overland two times a week to California. It gave the job of carrying the letters to a new company, the Overland Mail Company. The mail was carried by train or boat to St. Louis. Then it was put on Overland Company stagecoaches, light wagons pulled by four or six horses. The company was told to take the mail along a 4,000-kilometer southern route through Arkansas, Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The mail arrived in Los Angeles 24 days after it left St. Louis.
There was a shorter way across the country, but the postal chief was a Southerner, A.V. Brown. He believed stagecoach travel might lead the way for a railroad, and he wanted a southern railroad to California. Brown said the southern route was the only one that could be kept open in all seasons. He said the other routes would be closed by snow in winter. The overland stagecoaches were large enough to carry four passengers, but not many people went to California in the coaches. The coaches never stopped for very long, only to change horses or drivers. And there were not many places to eat. Also, the trip was dangerous because of hostile Indians.
The shortest distance between Missouri and California was across the central part of the country. The Russell, Majors, and Waddell Company decided to show that this central route could be used all year. It began a speedy mail service called the Pony Express. Letters were carried by riders on fast horses. Stations with fresh horses were built about 24 kilometers apart all along the way. A rider would change horses at each station until he had traveled 120 kilometers. Then he would give his letters to another rider. In this way, the letters would be carried between California and Missouri. The first letters sent by Pony Express from California took 10 days to reach Missouri. The Pony Express lasted only 18 months. It was no longer needed after a telegraph line was completed to San Francisco.
As communications and transportation improved, the government was able to increase its control over the West. But closer ties were not welcomed between the government and a religious group known as the Mormons. The Mormon religion was started by a young New England man named Joseph Smith. In 1823, at the age of 18, Smith claimed that an angel told him of a golden book. He said the book contained God's words to the ancient people of America. Smith said he was able to read the strange writing in this book and put it into English. He called this work the Book of Mormon.
He organized a church and made himself its leader. Many people became Mormons. They believed themselves to be a special people chosen by God. Mormons worked hard. They helped each other and shared with those in need. People who did not agree with the beliefs of the Mormons did not like them. Trouble developed between Mormons and other people. Joseph Smith was forced to move his people from New York to Ohio and then to Missouri. The Mormons seemed finally to have found a home in Illinois. They built their own town and called it Nauvoo. They governed themselves and had their own defense force. The Mormons did so well that Nauvoo became the fastest growing city in Illinois. Then some members of the group split apart because of a new message Smith claimed to have received from God. Smith said God gave permission for Mormons to have more than one wife. This was polygamy, and it was opposed by almost all people. Some of the Mormons who left the church published a newspaper criticizing Smith and the other Mormon leaders. Followers ordered by Smith destroyed the newspaper's publishing equipment. This caused non-Mormons to demonstrate and demand that Smith be punished. Smith was arrested and put in jail in Carthage, Illinois. His brother also was arrested. An angry mob attacked the jail and shot both Smith and his brother to death. The governor of Illinois ordered the Mormons to leave his state. He said only this would prevent further violence. There was no choice. They had to leave. The Mormons had a new leader, Brigham Young. Young decided to take his people west and find a new home for them. He wanted a place where they would be safe, where no one could interfere with their religion. Brigham Young told his people that he had seen their new home in a dream. He said they would search for it in the west, for a wide, beautiful valley. He said he would recognize it when he saw it.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.